It is Thursday, April 14th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Coming up, talks to end Syria's civil war resume in Geneva.
We need to make sure at any cost that the cessation of hostilities in spirit and in substance continues to give hope to the Syrian people.
The State Department releases its World Human Rights Report. What role, if any, did Russia's president have in releasing the Panama Papers? New technology gives new hope for the paralyzed. And the superstar girl group Fifth Harmony has a new CD. That's all on today's International Edition. Thank you for joining us. Talks to end Syria's five-year civil war have resumed in Geneva, Switzerland, even as fighting continues between pro-government forces and the al-Nusra Front around Aleppo. The talks came as Syrians began voting in government-controlled areas in a parliamentary election that is not recognized by the United Nations or by Syrian President Bashar al-Assad's opponents. In Switzerland, UN Special Envoy for Syria, Staffan de Mistura, called for a renewed commitment to the cessation of hostilities.
We need to make sure at any cost that the cessation of hostilities in spirit and in substance continues to give hope to the Syrian people. Because, as you know, that's what has made all of them believing that, in fact, even if they have to wait for the intra-Syrian talks, their lives are being at least improved. That's why tomorrow at the task force, we will be raising very actively the issue about making sure that those incidents, which have been serious, but are still incidents, are contained by those who can do so.
The partial truce was brokered by the United States and Russia and took effect February 27th. The number of deaths has decreased, but Russia has continued airstrikes against what it calls terrorist targets. Pro-government forces have also been advancing on the town of Al-Ais, which is held by the al-Qaeda affiliate al-Nusra Front and allied rebels. Terrorist groups like al-Qaeda and the Islamic State are excluded from the cessation of hostilities agreement. On Monday, the United States had voiced concern that an attack on the al-Nusra Front in Aleppo could spread to more moderate factions. In Geneva, the UN envoy acknowledged that there have been ceasefire violations, but he said that at his recent meetings with senior officials in Russia, Iran, Syria, and Jordan, that everyone had indicated interest and support in discussions leading to a political solution in Syria.
From Moscow to Tehran, even Damascus agreed on the fact that this is the agenda. I believe, perhaps if you look at it carefully, I think in the Novosti interview of President Bashar Assad, there was a reference to political transition more than once. So I don't see anyone doubting that that is the agenda. Now, of course, how do you go deeper into it is going to be the issue, but that's why we have this type of talks.
Here in Washington, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry urged all sides to adhere to the cessation of hostilities. He said that there is an opportunity to negotiate a transition in Syria in accordance with the Geneva Communique of 2012.
The Iranians have signed up to it. The Russians have signed up to it. The Turks, the Qataris, the Saudis, the Emiratis, most of the European countries, all the countries that are part of the International Syria Support Group, and we strongly urge all of the combatants to give Staffan de Mistura and his team an opportunity to be able to do their work in the next hours and days in Geneva.
Late Wednesday, U.S. President Barack Obama said that the cessation of hostilities has saved lives, but, in his words, it is tenuous and under strain. Mr. Obama said the United States will continue to do everything we can to help the cessation succeed and bring about a political transition in Syria. The president will travel to Saudi Arabia and will meet with Gulf Cooperation partners next week. Coming up, the State Department releases its annual human rights report. The Centers for Disease Control says the Zika virus does cause a debilitating birth defect. And the girl group Fifth Harmony has a new CD. This is VOA.
News happens around the clock, and VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock, on The Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's weekly newsmaker interview program. Listeners around the globe get insights from authors, analysts, and policymakers on a wide range of topics, from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. That's Press Conference USA, every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. The United States accused authoritarian regimes around the world Wednesday of suppressing their people with increasing vigor and viciousness to control any activities that might threaten their power. In its 40th annual human rights report, the U.S. State Department said a global crackdown by authoritarian states on civil society deepened, silencing independent voices, impoverishing political discourse, and closing avenues for peaceful change. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry said at the State Department Wednesday that the Middle East had what he called the most widespread and dramatic human rights violations in 2015.
And governments that deny political liberty forfeit public trust, thereby opening the door to civic unrest of all types, including, I might add, violent extremism.
The State Department report singled out numerous governments for criticism, including what it described as historically authoritarian regimes in North Korea, Cuba, China, Iran, Sudan, and Uzbekistan. The report also denounced the Islamic State for its brutal attacks on civilians. Even as the United States has normalized diplomatic relations with Cuba, and President Barack Obama recently visited the island nation, the State Department said Havana continued its practice of arbitrary short-term detentions to impede the exercise of freedoms of expression and peaceful assembly. The government also rearrested several political prisoners it had released in January of 2015 who had continued their activism during the year. Secretary Kerry said Wednesday, though, that there has been some progress in human rights, citing Tunisia, Myanmar, Nigeria, and Sri Lanka as examples.
Though in each, there are challenges that still need to be overcome, but we are working closely with each of those countries in efforts to help meet those challenges. Vietnam is another example. The country remains a single-party state, but Hanoi has pledged, as a member of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, to allow for the formation of independent trade unions for the first time, a potential significant advance for freedom of association.
The Secretary of State also strongly reinforced the United States' opposition to torture as a tactic by its own personnel, by its allies, and worldwide.
I want to remove even a scintilla of doubt or confusion that has been caused by statements that others have made in recent weeks and months. The United States is opposed to the use of torture in any form, at any time, by any government or non-state actor.
The Secretary of State said that America's commitment to humane treatment of prisoners has been reaffirmed countless times throughout history, and just last year was reaffirmed in bipartisan legislation approved by the U.S. Congress. Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump has said that he supports waterboarding and, quote, even worse torture methods in the fight against terrorism. So-called enhanced interrogation methods have been used by the United States in the war on terror. Staying with the issue of human rights, International Edition's G. Abby Lee joins us to tell us what people are talking about online. Gee, if people are interested in this State Department report, what's the best account to follow this story?
That would be the State Department's Bureau of Democracy, Human Rights, and Labor. Its handle is @state_DRL. It's tweeting about the report and retweeting John Kerry's tweets. He wrote, "The State Department strives to protect human dignity worldwide. A privilege today to unveil our annual #HumanRightsReport and share the link to the full report."
So if folks are interested, what other accounts can they follow?
The rights group Amnesty International is also a good one, @Amnesty. Its latest tweets focus on the issue of death penalty.
Now, what else is trending on social media today?
Dave, the leading Republican presidential contender, Donald Trump's CNN town hall on Tuesday is still trending. The hashtag that goes with it is #TrumpFamily. On the Democratic side, New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio is in the hot seat for a racial joke he made at an event with former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. Here is how it went down. She playfully said it took him long enough to endorse her presidential bid, to which he replied, "Sorry, Hillary, I was running on CP time," referring to what's known as colored people time. Many people found that comment to be politically incorrect, but others still pointed out the outrage would have been greater if a conservative politician made that joke. Dave?
Sometimes the jokes just don't work. All right, that's International Edition's G. Abby Lee. She tweets for our program @VOA_IE. You can also follow her on Twitter @GAbbyLee. That's JEEABBEYLEE. This month's release of the Panama Papers Journalism Project on secretive offshore companies in Panama and elsewhere has generated a heated debate about Russian President Vladimir Putin's alleged links to corrupt activities. The project alleges that close associates of Putin hid $2 billion in offshore company accounts in recent years, something the authors say raises questions about whether the Russian president had a role in the secretive money movements. Ilya Zasovsky is an energy and political risks analyst at the Free Russia Foundation, a research and nonprofit group based in Washington that is opposed to President Putin. My colleague Michael Lippin spoke with Zaslavsky at our VOA studios on Wednesday and asked him what he makes of Putin's dismissive response to the Panama Papers.
He actually sounded very annoyed and defensive. He started, you know, with the history of Russia and made a whole speech about, you know, Russian versus West contradictions. And he poured all sorts of information as his defense, trying to really to present it as a battle between, you know, almost like two civilizations.
And do the Russian people believe that?
Well, the Russian people don't have that much access to this information, at least on TV, and Russians really listen to TV, most of them. The ones who make some effort or have access to internet, they can read it on websites of those international investigators, including in Russian, or they can go to Novaya Gazeta, which was part of the Russian part of this investigation.
So have you actually seen any backlash at all from Russians, you know, within Russia?
Well, some of the opposition figures and people who support them in big cities, they've been very upset with this. But of course, given all the state propaganda and different sort of stories and conspiracies running around it, it's difficult to see a massive response. But it doesn't mean there is a overwhelming majority of people who support Putin. They just quietly sit in their, you know, homes, kitchens, as Russians did in Soviet Union, and discuss it among themselves in the kitchens.
Well, you mentioned conspiracy theories. There is one seeming conspiracy theory that was published in recent days by an economist with the Brookings Institution, which is based here in Washington. That economist says that he thinks Putin and his government are behind the Panama Papers because they don't directly implicate Putin in wrongdoing, and because there's also a lack of information so far about American names linked to offshore shell companies. And that economist thinks that the lack of information about American names is a deliberate attempt by Russia to blackmail America and the West, because he thinks Russia really does have the names of Americans and is withholding those to use as a kind of leverage. What do you think of this theory?
I mean, this theory is really conspiratorial and lacks logic and facts behind it. I've read that article, and the statement goes that because Putin is not directly implicated, then it's not a big deal. Well, firstly, we know from Putin's previous criminal stories in St. Petersburg, for example, Marina Salier dossier, that even in 1990s, he already avoided having his name on the assets that he had profits from. So that was shown by Spanish investigation, for example, which was recently aired by BBC Panorama.
So you're saying he's smart enough to avoid having his name directly implicated?
Absolutely, yes. And as I said previously, the range of state companies and his close friends involved in this scheme, that implicates him. And the sum, $2 billion in cash, is huge, even for Russia.
That's Ilya Zaslavsky, an analyst with the Free Russia Foundation, speaking with International Edition's Michael Lippin. Coming up, the CDC says the Zika virus does cause a debilitating birth defect. Technology helps a paralyzed man play Guitar Hero, and Fifth Harmony has a new CD coming out. This is VOA.
Hi, I'm Larry London, and I'm the host of Border Crossings, inviting you to join me for one of the best hours of request music possible on the radio. We've got all your favorite songs by your favorite singers. You tell us what to play. It's requests and dedications, and it happens every weekday right here on The Voice of America.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA podcasts a try.
VOANews.com.
Visit our website at VOANews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says there is no longer any doubt that the Zika virus causes babies to be born with a condition called microcephaly, where they have abnormally small heads and other birth defects. Since last year, doctors in Brazil have been linking the mosquito-borne Zika virus infection in pregnant women to the birth defect. However, other countries were reluctant to definitively state that there was a link between the two. Dr. Sonia Rasmussen of the CDC's Division of Public Health Dissemination says that now enough evidence is in.
I think it really helps us by being able to say that Zika causes or is a cause of microcephaly and serious brain defects, that we can be more clear in our messaging and we can really focus our research into the important remaining questions. There's a lot of important remaining questions. What is the level of risk? What is the full spectrum? Are there other defects, other non-brain defects? Are there other learning problems that we'll see with kids later on in life? And then what are the other factors that increase or decrease the risk of a baby having problems related to Zika if a mom is infected during pregnancy?
The CDC and other health agencies have been operating under the assumption that Zika causes birth defects and have been advising people to avoid mosquito-infested areas, to wear insect repellent, to abstain from unprotected sex or to use a condom, and to avoid travel to Zika-stricken areas. Dr. Rasmussen says that guidance has not changed.
Our guidance really hasn't changed. We've assumed since January 15th we've been giving recommendations to protect pregnant women. We knew we had to move ahead at that time because we had evidence, not conclusive evidence like we had now, but we had evidence even back then that Zika virus was likely to be a cause of problems during pregnancy.
Rasmussen says women also need to protect themselves if their partner has been to a Zika-infected area, because even if their baby appears healthy, there is the possibility that other serious complications could be linked to this virus.
I think we don't know if it's the tip of the iceberg, but we know from other infections and other things that have caused problems during pregnancy, that sometimes what we see at first is the tip of the iceberg, that sometimes then you learn that other problems are associated with that infection during pregnancy.
The CDC researcher cautions that more research needs to be done to understand the level of risk, because not all women infected with the virus have borne children with microcephaly. Some experts are hoping the CDC's report will help change public thinking about the risks of Zika infection in the same way that the 1964 Surgeon General's report on smoking convinced many people that cigarette smoking causes lung cancer. Doctors have given a paralyzed man some use of his right hand using a computer and electronic sensors. 24-year-old Ian Burkhardt can perform simple tasks now, like holding a bottle, pouring the contents out, picking up a stick, and stirring. He can also swipe a credit card, move individual fingers, and even hold a toothbrush. And he can play the popular video game Guitar Hero.
It was a big shock because, you know, it's something that I hadn't moved in about 3.5 years at that point. Now it's just something that's so fluid, it's just kind of like it was before I had my injury, where I just think about what I want to do, and now I can do it.
Burkhardt was injured at the age of 19 when he dove headfirst into water he thought was deep. He hit his head on a sandbar and broke his neck. After the injury, he was not able to move below the shoulders. Dr. Ali Rezai is a neurosurgeon at Ohio State University and the author of a study on Burkhardt. He says that the technology, using a cable that's attached to a small projection from Burkhardt's skull, carries signals to a computer focused on trying to interpret the task that Burkhardt is trying to accomplish.
Now, as a result of his technology and our team's efforts, he's able to, by using the power of his mind, by thinking about the movements and the intention to move, he's able to get functional recovery and move his hands on demand. And essentially, within milliseconds of thinking, we're able to bypass the damaged spinal cord and link the brain signals to an external wearable sleeve garment that he wears. We believe that this is a significant advance in the field of brain-computer interface because a patient is able to use his own hands that he has not been able to move for 5 years as a result of being quadriplegic.
So far, the activities have been confined to a laboratory setting, and Burkhardt is only able to perform the tasks for a few hours over the course of a week because he has to stay hooked up to a device that interprets his brain signals and stimulates his muscles with electrodes on his forearm. But the 24-year-old Burkhardt says his success is just the beginning.
When we first started the research, it was really just kind of a proof of concept story. And now that we've been able to really see that it's something that can work, I know that in the future it'll really be able to help a lot of people.
Burkhardt's story could give hope to others with spinal cord injuries, and researchers say that future iterations of the device might be untethered, allowing more freedom. The all-girl group Fifth Harmony was formed on the TV show The X Factor, and their first album, Reflections, was certified gold by the Radio Industry Association of America in February. The album had three hit singles, Boss, Sledgehammer, and Worth It, that were all certified platinum. Worth It racked up multi-platinum status. Now Fifth Harmony has a new album due out, 727, and International Edition Susan Yockey talked with VOA Border Crossings host Larry London about the album and the group's new single, Work From Home.
The musical group Fifth Harmony has a new album coming out with a new single, and to tell us all about it is Larry London of Border Crossings. Welcome, Larry.
Well, thank you, Susan. Yes, Fifth Harmony are coming out with their second album within 1 year.
Wow.
And that's kind of unusual, but they have been recording and writing and producing lots and lots of music. So the first album, Reflections, came out last year, and now we're waiting for the second album. May 27th is the release date. The new album is called 727, which, interestingly enough, is the day they were discovered on The X Factor.
Oh, that's neat.
So that's why they decided to call the new album 727. They say this album is going to be a little different for their fans than the first album was, in that it will be more R&B, more hip-hop oriented. They've worked with some hip-hop producers on the new album. The girls keep getting asked the same question. Are you breaking up? Are you breaking up? And at first they said, well, one day we will. And now, you know, they're saying less of that. They're saying, no, our plan is to stay together, you know, and ride this out. So we'll see how it all works out for Fifth Harmony. But very talented young ladies. And I have had them on my show several times.
Oh.
They're a pleasure to talk to. They're a lot of fun. And in a day and age where, you know, it seems that female artists reign supreme, they've got a lot going for them. They've got a huge fan group, which is called the Harmonizers. That's what their fan club's known as. And I think the new album will be good, 727. You don't gotta go to work, but you gotta go to work. You don't gotta go to work. And my body do the work.
You're going to place this one new single anywhere, the Work From Home?
Yeah, you know, the interesting story behind the new single for them was that they were going to call it Work. But they decided that Rihanna's song, Work, would confuse the fans and confuse the audience because Rihanna's Work has been number one now for 6 weeks.
Right.
And so they changed the name of it to Work From Home. So it'd give it a
I like
a
it.
Twist.
I think it's cute.
Yeah, and I think we should do more of that.
Okay. Well, Larry, remind our listeners where they can find you.
Well, thank you, Susan. Fifth Harmony can be found around the world, and Larry London can be found on Border Crossings. You can find me several places. You can go to the voanews.com website and search Larry London. It'll probably show you where I am. The name of the show is Border Crossings, or you can go to facebook.com/VOA Larry London.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Larry.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for VOA's International Edition. Tracy Carter directed our program. Zubair El-Tayeb was our engineer. We welcome your questions or comments about our show. You can find us on Facebook at VOA Now. You can follow us on Twitter. We're at VOA_IE. And you can email us at voaasia@voanews.com. For video and for more about the stories you heard on our show, check out our website. That's voanews.com. Until next time, for all the folks here at VOA, I'm David Byrd in Washington.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
22 years ago, one of the worst crimes against humanity in the 20th century occurred in Rwanda. More than 800,000 men, women, and children were systematically murdered during 100 days of unspeakable violence. The killings, deliberately planned and sanctioned by the ethnic Hutu-led government, began in earnest April 7, 1994, the day after a plane carrying the presidents of Rwanda and Burundi was shot down, killing both leaders. Ethnic Tutsi citizens, a minority in the country's population of about 7 million, were specifically targeted. However, politically moderate Hutu and ethnic Twa sympathizers were also killed. "We honor not just the victims," said President Barack Obama in a written statement delivered on the commemoration of the 22nd anniversary of the genocide, "but also those who risked their lives to save others, as well as the survivors who carry the memories of these atrocities. It is important to mark these occasions in order to remind ourselves," said President Obama, "of our common humanity and shared commitment to protecting civilians and ensuring that mass atrocities of this magnitude never happen again." Over the last two decades, Rwanda has made progress in moving beyond these horrible crimes and in building a more peaceful and prosperous future for its citizens. The United States remains deeply committed to preventing the horror of mass atrocities and genocide from occurring again, and to continuing to work with the people of Rwanda and the international community to finish the task of bringing those responsible for those heinous acts to justice.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.
for what's your